You've met.
Christie.
So now we're referring to agenda paper 2, and the topic is presentation of profit and loss and other comprehensive income. And this refers to section 8 in the discussion paper. And there's a number of sections and questions in the agenda paper, and I'll take you through each of those sections. So the first section or part of the paper that we'll talk about is financial performance. And some stakeholders think that the ISB should or should have defined financial performance. The ISB thinks that information about financial performance can be derived from a number of sources in the entity's financial statements, and therefore did not seek to define financial performance as a term, but rather sought to explore how all items of recognised income and expense can be presented in the statement of comprehensive income in the most useful fashion. So that brings me to the first question, which is at the bottom of paragraph 6. In the discussion paper, the ISB does not define financial performance. Do you agree that the ISB should not define financial performance? Or if you do, how would you define it? And do you think it should be equated with profit and loss? So if I can open up that to the round table.
Any comments?
I think it will be very difficult for the ISB to define financial performance. At the moment we are busy within ESMA with a project called non-GAAP measures. And from there it appears that users and issuers have all kinds of ideas about what is our financial performance. So I think it will be very difficult for the ISB to define performance.
Mike?
I think that the problem is that what is performance is really at the heart of all the debates that seem unsettled about shall we recycle things or shall we not recycle things? Shall we put them in P&L or shall we put them in OCI? And it, you know, does seem to be the elephant in the room of all of those discussions, and not trying to tackle it, even if you have a long discussion about it and host a debate, but then you end up concluding you can't define it, you have to move in some other way. Not to deal with it just seems to be unfortunate, because I think it is at the heart of all the issues about recycling, not recycling, P&L and OCI. And if you ask me for my view on what performance is, I don't have a ready-made answer for you as a consultee, still thinking about it, but I certainly don't think that just defining it as profit or loss would work, because that's just moving the problem somewhere else. I mean, people will see profit or loss as the consequence of performance. It is performance, I'll put it in the P&L, so it goes in the P&L, therefore its performance isn't really going to settle the issue, I think.
Mike, do you think performance is confined to the statement of comprehensive income, or would you look more broadly when thinking about performance?
Well, I think the issue that you've probably got is that there's probably disagreement around the place as to whether or not what's in OCI is performance anyway. I think there are probably people who look on accounting and think, well, I'm really interested in my profit and loss account, and that's what I think is performance, so they're not really interested in what's in OCI. And then you have other people who are interested in, well, let's get the right measurement on the balance sheet, and I'm not really interested in how it's divided up between P&L and OCI. So I don't think what beyond OCI, I think it's P&L versus OCI is the issue, not something beyond that.
Okay.
Which is what we have tried to tackle, P&L and OCI. Without defining performance.
Well, you have a list in here, I forget which paragraph it is, of some things that we considered. It seems to me when you go to your narrow and broad, and I forget what the first one you had was called, but anyway, you are trying to tackle the sorts of issues that you said you didn't think you could tackle. So you've found yourself back in the box of having to deal with, I think one of the criteria that you decided wouldn't be workable was long-term or something in that list. And yet, in the broad thing, we've decided we're going to have a criteria of something that's transitory or not transitory. Well, isn't that sort of the same thing? And where we are with with the broad approach seems to be, in a way, forgive me for putting it slightly uncharitably, is sort of reverse engineering where standards are at the minute into the framework.
Yeah, I actually we've heard that before, but I don't actually think that's true in what we've done. You know, some people have said we should be more aspirational and we're just trying to paper over the cracks. I actually think we've had another go at ASCI and it wouldn't paper over the cracks if we did what was in the document.
So, well, I agree there will be a few changes, but I don't think it's a long way from where we're at the minute. And then you would leave yourself with a lot of discretion as to what to do on a standards by standard basis, which is kind of where we are at the minute and how we've got on a standard by standard basis to make a decision to put that there and put that there. So
I have a private debate with Ron.
I'd still say I think it is helpful for users if at least someone tries to define financial performance, and maybe I won't say the loose term just financial performance. What I'm interested in seeing is something that's sort of periodic financial performance, so narrowing it down to understanding the P&L, and as rightly was said by Mike, you know, the whole OCI debate just underlines that, you know, we do recognise that that's an important factor. We had a comment that the rise of non-GAAP measures is an indication that companies and users have, you know, certain different views about performance. You know, actually, I see that as a negative that requires the accounting standard setters or regulators or somebody to try and step in and police some of these non-GAAP measures, because I think there are measures that are being used that aren't correctly reflecting the economic substance of what's going on in businesses, and yet they're being used and not queried too much by users, and maybe, you know, and that reflects that, you know, clearly bright users can go and, you know, make any restatements they want, but I think there's a, you know, it would be helpful for the less well-informed users to at least be given numbers that are economically rational.
Yeah, I would very much agree with what Ted said before. I mean that, but not by not defining performance, we somehow raise the question, what is the difference between the P&L and OCI? Why don't we have everything just in one statement and without making any distinction? And clearly, in my view, that was driven by this, and I think that probably just trying to narrow it down a little bit would help users in gaining a bit of comparability, because there are indeed a lot of, maybe, I mean, preparers, they are very inventive in creating a lot of indicators for financial performance, and probably there are a lot of them, but I think it would be indeed very useful to have a bit of the indication on what we believe it is.
Jed, a question. Do you mean that you would like the ISB would come up with definitions of what is EBIT, what is EBITDA, what are those non-GAAP measures? Because it is to decide, it had to be decided by the user and by the preparer. Well, they consider as performance, but what we now see sometimes is that EBIT is not defined in financial statements. It's not clear how they calculate and that kind of thing. So there we could make improvement without giving a definition of what is performance.
So I agree, you know, there are many shades of grey on performance, and every business, you know, you need to look at the relevant things for that business. But I think if you had some framework that clearly defined some subtotals in the P&L and various other things that were meaningful, and maybe this is financial statement presentation project rather than conceptual framework. But if you can start to define those things, then, you know, management can depart from those subtotals to say, and the reason why this subtotal isn't so meaningful for us is this, this, and this. But as soon as you abrogate responsibility to define performance in any way, then effectively anyone can define performance any way they want, and there's no, you know, there are no rules of the game or rules of engagement. And I just think that that's, you know, inherently risky.
Martin?
I wondered whether there's some kind of middle ground, sort of recognising what Jed said there, that rather than defining what financial performance is, that there's a way of providing guidance or indicators as to how companies should come up with a useful measure of performance for their particular industry, because I think it is difficult to come up with a single definition that would apply to the oil and gas industry and to banks and to retailers, but maybe providing some kind of guidance that allows you to take into account the industry in which it operates, the business environments in which it operates, and strip out whatever happens to be non-recurring or all those kind of things that people do, that setting that kind of framework might be a useful way forward rather than a single definition.
I mean, it's interesting, by understanding, you correct me if I'm not right, Christy, but we had a look at performance, and the first one is you could take comprehensive income and say that's performance, and we've discussed that in the paper and said maybe that's not such a good idea. Then we've said profit and loss is an important figure. And then we've backed out of that by saying, well, what do you take out of profit and loss and put in OCI, and that's where the discussion is. But it comes back to almost the same thing if you think about it, sort of by default. Now, that may have not been the best way to approach it, I don't know. You could go the other way and define what's in profit and loss and then all the rest goes to OCI, or you can define what's in OCI and all the rest goes to profit and loss, which is what we've done. But there is an implicit definition of performance in there if you go through it, I think.
Move to the next section. Paper.
You don't want to contradict me.
I was just going to say that I think that a lot of people will expect something, some sort of definition. Maybe it is the implicit definition you're talking about of what profit and loss is. And that might be a start. And the ideas of a framework for governing measures other than profit and loss might be interesting as well.
Which is the road we're heading down.
Yeah,
but I think that's open for debate.
I think you need some definition, whether it's a financial performance or whether it's a profit and loss. But I think you've got to have something.
Everything
or a conceptual framework to sort of hold together, and as you say, you're virtually there implicitly.
Yeah, everything that's in comprehensive income except what's in OCI.
Well, I think, would you like that sort of definition? I'm not sure, it's a concept. That's a very good start.
Okay. Well, actually, one thing that would worry me about trying to define profit or loss is I think it would be quite difficult to be complete, and I think there's quite a high risk that we'd find some things dropping out that we didn't expect to drop out.
Okay, well, let's not have that either.
Chandler.
Your chair, may I ask a question there? This financial performance is quite, definition of this is quite related to everything in the conceptual frame, maybe measurement, fair value, we should measure. Fair value or not, everything is related, like P&L or OCI. So I'm wondering, in a user's point perspective, are you still eager to have some kind of cash flow basis? I mean, cash flow performance is the best maybe definition, a kind of definition in your area.
I'm not sure I'd agree that cash flow performance is the best definition of performance. I mean, that's the whole reason why the P&L was created in the first place, to try and match mismatched timings of cash flow with the underlying economics of what's going on in the business. You know, clearly, I guess the question is it right to be discussing this in this conceptual framework? Or is it right to be discussing it in the financial statement presentation project? And if you move down a cohesiveness framework, you're getting that linkage between the various statements. So you can see how it's all joined up and what the underlying performance is and where the mismatches occur. My perspective, I think, is that the single statement of comprehensive income is the most meaningful metric, but I'd rather we got the definition of equity right. Once we've got the definition of equity right, I think you get the right reconciliation between opening and closing shareholders' funds. And then understanding that is important. And as long as you've got enough subtitles to get there, so we can see, okay, what's repeatable performance and what's underlying earnings power and all those other metrics that we look at. And then you look at the other things that are moving, whether they're being recycled or put into OCI in the first time or whatever, then you get a sensible framework to do your analysis. But I don't think we're there at the moment, and I'm not sure how much you need to specify that aspiration within the conceptual framework document.
Okay. Christy, you might move on. We are.
That's
a good discussion.
So the next section talks about the IC's decision to retain profit and loss as a subtotal or total in the conceptual framework. And the discussion paper details some of the arguments the ISB considered in determining whether profit and loss should be retained as a subtotal or total, and those are set out in Table 1 of the agenda paper. The board was persuaded by the arguments in favour of retaining a subtotal for profit and loss. They did feel it provided useful information and is a starting point for much analysis about an entity. So therefore, it brings me to the question, which is below paragraph 8. So the ISB's preliminary view was to retain, that the conceptual framework should retain a subtotal for profit and loss. And do you agree with that?
Point we were making just a minute ago.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, Tristan.
Okay, so then we'll move through. Good. So the next section, it's subtotaled approaches to profit and loss and recycling, but the first point to bring out in this section is the recycling point. And the in determining that the conceptual framework should retain a subtotal for profit or loss, there was also the notion of recycling needed to be dealt with, and there were some views that there should be no recycling, so that the items of income and expense should only be recognised once and once only. There was also views that recycling should be permitted, and there were advantages for allowing recycling, and those are set out, or the advantages for and against are set out in Table 2 of the agenda paper, which is under paragraph 11. Having considered those arguments, the board determined preliminary view that any requirement to present profit and loss as a total or subtotal should also result or could result in at least some items being recycled out of OCI into profit and loss in a subsequent period. So the next question, which is under paragraph 13, asks you whether you agree with the ISB's preliminary view. And if you disagree, how would you deal with cash flow hedging?
There's a good one. Anyone want to start?
To be honest, I don't like recycling for the arguments mentioned in the overview. However, I acknowledge that, for example, in cash flow hedge accounting, you have to recycle, otherwise the whole system will not work. So from a negative point of view, I think we have to accept recycling.
But would you restrict it to only cash flow hedge account?
I'm thinking about that, if we should accept it, but indeed, I believe that we should limit the recycling as much as possible.
Any other comments?
Yeah. We're still debating this one, the recycle or not recycle, but I do just wonder whether the test case might be some more uncontroversial accounting than the cash flow hedge. I mean, why don't you think about the things we've had around for decades in terms of retranslation of foreign subsidiaries, which is something that's currently recycled, proposed to be under the arrangements there, and you get these numbers in OCI every year. Users tell me if I'm wrong, but I think people look at them, they do see them, they know what they are, they understand them, query why do we, you know, 10 years later, why do we need to see 10 years worth scooped up and dropped in the P&L again? You know, is that, I think that's a, you know, another way of coming at it and having a look. To move away from the controversial, try the uncontroversial accounting.
Further comments?
I was just going to say, yeah, a lot of this is about how you present the information, isn't it? You know, if you had, yeah, if you were thinking about a single statement with subtotals, the way that, for example, you'd move a cash flow hedge out of OCI and up into the P&L could be very clear using some sort of columnar approach or something, and then stuff that you were effectively recycling were movements in fair value could happen below some performance measure line, because again, I wouldn't want to be recycling gains of that have gone through OCI back into the P&L because I've just realised them when I've already effectively recognised them in shareholders' equity, because there's too much ability then for earnings management just to realise a gain at the right moment. So, you know, I think you need to be very clear about how you create the framework for reporting to understand performance and stewardship.
Further comments? Okay, Christine.
So the next section is starting in paragraph 14, which talks about retaining the concept of profit and loss and recycling. So having decided that the board's preliminary view that a total for profit and loss, which includes some notion of recycling, should be retained, the discussion paper then talks about how an item of income and expense can be distinguished from whether it should be recognised in profit and loss and OCI, and which items in recognised in OCI should be subsequently recycled. And in looking at that, the board did seek to, or looked at a number of commonly suggested attributes, and Mike, this is what you referred to earlier, in terms of realisation, non-realised, realised, unrealised, recurring, non-recurring, operating, non-operating, and none of them in isolation seemed would easily enable the ISB to distinguish the items that were in profit and loss from OCI. So instead, the discussion of paper explored two approaches, and I'll go into those approaches in the next question, but they were both broadly on the same principles that profit and loss provides the primary source of information about the return the entity has made on its economic resources in the period, and that to support that primary information, OCI should only be used if it makes profit and loss more relevant, i.e. enhances its predictive value or makes it more understandable. Based on that, it was determined that OCI should only be used for some, but not all, remeasurements of assets measured on assets and liabilities measured on a current basis. So, and I think the result is that profit and loss, or OCI, if profit and loss is the default item, and OCI is what we've tried to describe. So moving on to question 4, which is under paragraph 19, the discussion paper suggests distinguishing between profit and loss and OCI, but describing the items that could be recognised in OCI. This approach means that profit and loss is treated as the default category. Do you agree with this approach? If you disagree, how would you define profit and loss, or describe profit and loss?
Comments on that, Richard?
Yeah, I think my problem here, from a sort of conceptual framework sort of point of view, is the is perhaps the word could be recognised in OCI. I mean, can we not? Is it too ambitious to suggest that you could work out items that must or should be recognised in OCI, I'm happy with the default. I think in principle I'm happy with the default category to P&L, but I think there's a sort of, it's just leaving it very open here that you know in certain cases you might decide to send it to OCI, and other cases that look rather similar you might decide not to send it to OCI. I wonder whether we can't aim for a should.
Thanks.
I wonder I don't have an answer to the question, but I have a question of my own, which is that you talk about current measurement,
yeah.
And I may have read it too quickly, but I didn't see a definition of what exactly is meant by current measurement. I think it's meaning it's a broader concept, I think, than a current market value or fair value. But what is current value?
It refers to, we've got three categories in the measurement chapter, so it would be the current market prices and other cash flow based measures, so not a cost based measure. We felt that cost based measures reflected transactions and consumption and impairment that should be reflected in the period in which they occur. So it's only the change in value of something that's measured at a current market price or an other cash flow based measure that would be eligible to be presented in OCI.
And I think that brings us into types of current OCI, like foreign currency retranslation of subsidiaries. I think I was struggling to see how that's in part it's a current measure because it's using the current spot exchange rate, but it's multiplying that by a historical cost amount. Mm-hmm. So should that be included or shouldn't it? And if it should, then how is that different from if it's purely changes in rates which are outside the control of the entity, then should changes in tax rates be brought in measuring either current deferred tax? I find it a little bit difficult to see where this will be going.
And I think it's a good question. We did try to determine what the measure in FX translation was in terms of measurement in terms of those three categories, but I think we didn't discuss that or address it in the conceptual framework itself, but I think it does bring in that question, what is the nature of that measurement? It's a bit like the equity method that we're talking about, what type of measure is it? And in some ways, when we talk about presentation and OCI, we get the end results of decisions made at a standards level, and I think FX translation and the issues around that and what does it represent are falling through in this presentation.
Brenda.
I was interested in the impairment and the cost-based measurement you mentioned. Impairment could sometimes arise where an asset's been fair valued, perhaps a subsidiary that's changed control from an associate, which isn't really a cash transaction. So is it equating cash and cash as cost?
It's not. We're not trying to equate remeasurements with cash remeasurements. But when looking at impairment, we did include within what we deem to be a cost-based measure, an amortized cost-based measure. But I do take your point that effectively could be seen as an other cash flow-based measure because the impairment is a reassessment of your expected cash flows. We did feel that that it would provide relevant information in the period that it had occurred and people wouldn't want to see that in OCI. So for that reason, we felt that attributing it a cost-based measure attribute, you could question where it actually sat in those measurements, was appropriate way to reflect, you know, it would be relevant in profit and loss in the period that it occurred.
Okay, you might want to move on.
Sorry.
I
was wondering about the way it is designed. First of all, you start with the broad principles, mm-hmm. and when you look to the broad principles, especially to 17 letter B, where it is stated that OCI should only be used if it makes profit loss more relevant. For example, enhances the predictive value of profit and loss. A lot of people could start arguing about underlying profit. Everything which is not included in underlying profit should be in OCI. And I don't think that is the idea, because you based on that broad principle, you come to a smaller definition. But does that definition help us? Because there was the question about what is current measurement, but and here was the question about should occlude. I'm not sure that this part
will give much guidance on selecting what is in LCI.
And based on that, or think that's why we've gone down to some more specific concepts in order to say how we felt those principles applied, and how, you know, this is brought into the conceptual framework will obviously be at some point, well, depends on obviously the feedback we receive, but I would expect that what ends up in the framework is something more framework-like and somewhere between how we've applied those principles and the principles themselves. But they're trying to give you a sort of basis for why we ended up with the two approaches that we have to A and to B.
But within that approach,
mm-hmm.
there is a lot of room to say, okay, now we do it in LCI, and now we do it in P&L. And by defining it that broad, there is a risk there will be a lot of pressure on ISB in specific projects to put things in LCI. And people could argue, now based on the framework, you can do so.
Mm-hmm.
So from that point of view, it might be an advantage if it could be defined more.
Mm-hmm. And
to be honest, I do not have the solution for you.
But maybe, you know, on that point, it's worth going into the approaches themselves, and they're set out in paragraphs 20 to 26 in the agenda paper, and I won't go through them in detail, but there are two approaches that using those principles that we applied. The first 2A is what we call a narrow approach, and I think that does give quite a strict framework for applying OCI, but the result of that is that there is some items that are currently in OCI that would not meet that criteria, and I think it would give a very strict framework for the ISB to apply when setting standards in the future about the use of OCI and profit and loss. The broader approach broadens that, and I think there is a lot more that could be or be eligible for presentation in OCI, and I think it means that there is a lot more decision making to be made by the board when setting standards in the broader approach. The other approach that we briefly mentioned when talking about recycling was the approach that there is no recycling, and so therefore we wouldn't seek to define or require a subtotal for profit and loss in the statement of comprehensive income, at least at a conceptual framework basis. So those are the three approaches. On that basis, I would like to ask on question 5, which is on the last page of the agenda reference. Do you, having considered those three approaches to describing what goes in OCI, would you support approach 1, which would prohibit recycling? So we wouldn't think to describe profit and loss in the comprehensive income, and that items of income and expense would be recognised once and only once. That's often referred to as a single statement approach, but I think that might be a misnomer. The other two approaches are a very narrow approach to the use of OCI, as we've described in the discussion paper, or a broader approach. So which would you prefer? And if you don't prefer any of them or don't like any of those, any suggestion to something alternative would be good.
Any comments on that? Getting down to the pointy end of the presentation.
Now, I can give you some more detail about the approaches, but I hope that's sort of detailed in the paper.
Yeah, I think I prefer approach 2B, although I think the concern I have with it is that it's not really an approach, it's more of a deciding not to have an approach. And so, I mean, that's fine. I think it's if the thought process has been gone through and it effectively ends up being, well, we'd like to retain flexibility to make decisions at standard level, then that's fine, but the outcome of approach 2B, I think, is where I would like to get to.
Mm-hmm. We did feel that, and I understand your point, we did feel that even if it did mean that there was a lot of decisions that needed to be made at a board level, even approach B would provide a framework, a better framework or process for making that decision than the board currently has in terms of deciding what goes into profit and loss and OCI. So it would be some tools or some discussion points to use in order to making that determination, but I do recognise the point that it does leave quite a lot of discretion at the board when setting standards.
Well, considering we cannot go for approach one, I think I would like approach 2B, but we're more in favour into A because it helps to somehow narrow down and not to leave too much leeway for the preparers and to use the OCI like for everything, and also in the context in which we don't have a definition of performance, it could help to
a bit more. Because I think approach A does implicitly say that the most information about financial performance is most items of income and expense, and let's think about presenting them in a good way, and that goes to your FSP project, and let's limit in very defined circumstances where we think things should be in OCI. So I think that's implicitly what approach A is saying about profit and loss.
Patrick.
Yes. I think that if we acknowledge that profit or loss is the primary measure for performance, and if we want profit or loss to be a meaningful measure, then I would rather go to approach 2B. And I would require recycling when it is useful to measure performance. So there would be only very few cases where recycling would not be allowed, because it doesn't mean anything for assessing performance.
Mm. Martin. Mike.
Sorry, thanks. I mean, we haven't made our mind up on this, but I would just like to agree with Martin's point, first of all, that approach 2B, not some of the other approaches as well, do to us seem to amount to deciding not to have an approach. I would agree with that point there. And then when I look at some of the criteria, and this is some of the comments we've had around here that sort of highlights the problem we've not been able to tackle in a way as a profession. So the mismatched remeasurements, we're going to use OCI for that when the information that we're using provides little relevant information about the return the entity's made on its economic resources in the period. That seems quite an interesting idea that we've got this information, but it's not relevant, so we're going to squirrel this away. And then I was noticing on the bridging items that we say we'll use that where we've used, that's the useful thing to use where we've used two measures. But then when we looked at the measurement piece earlier, we were talking about, well, actually when we choose a measure, we actually have to have a look at what it will do to our various other statements, not just the balance sheet. So that seems to be a sort of a loop that says, well, you've got to work out how meaningful it is to these other statements, P&L and OCI, and then OCI and P&L don't really have defined functions. We've left it to ourselves to say, well, it's just a scoop up when we do want to use different measurements. I'm not sure it's helping us, and I've just heard comments around the table about the fact that we'll recycle because that's when it feels like performance has happened. So are we talking ourselves into OCI as something that we don't really believe in it as performance? I think these are all the untested sort of problems that we're...
But I think
maybe it's impossible to make significant progress on that, but I'm concerned we haven't made significant progress on them.
I think, though, in terms of bridging items, which you referred to, the board would look at, given a profit and loss as the primary measure of what return the entity has made on its economic resources, in determining a measure, as we discussed, they would look both at the profit and loss statement and both at the statement of financial position. If they felt that two measures were so relevant and provided relevant information, they may recognise one measurement in the statement of financial position and the effects of another in profit and loss. Therefore, OCI is the bridge between those two. And I think one of, you talk about recycling, giving you relevant information. If you really have a definable a real measure which is describable, understandable in profit and loss, then recycling is an automatic consequence of that. So I think it does provide you relevant information because it follows the measurement basis which is being reflected in profit and loss. And that was the concept behind bridging items. And mismatch remeasurements, you said screw all away, but to a certain extent it is, and you even mentioned FX remeasurements and translations, and do they provide you with relevant information? And there is a sense that perhaps they're not providing the most relevant information, and so that may, putting those in OCI may give you that sort of places to hold certain gains and losses where you feel that the would be more useful. So I don't know, that was kind of our thought process between those items, and I think both in those cases, in bridging items and mismatch remeasurements, recycling in effect is an automatic consequence of the reason why you put them into OCI in the first place. No?
I think 2A is too narrow. 2B is broad. How broad is broad? Though certainly neither at P nor at ACCA have we thought about whether there might be some way in which you might be able to limit but re-express 2B in a more coherent, limited, defined way. I'm sure we ought to in considering our response. We will do that. But I think you can't. I don't think you can leave it as open as it is. Together with the could, should, question that I've already raised, which I think is absolutely implicit in 2B. You've decided. There are some things that have gone to OCI, but that principle might not be applicable to all items. So you wouldn't want to necessarily send all like items to OCI. I think you need to move closer to some principles where you could be happy to send all those items to OCI.
Can I ask a question which is not for answering today, but hopefully in your comment letter?
Yep.
If after your discussions you find it difficult to identify something in between 2A and 2B,
yep.
It would be helpful to us, I think, if you could say whether it would be better to go towards 2A or 2B.
Okay.
Given that neither of them might be perfect. But.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, fair enough.
Any other comments? What I might do is call a 5-minute break till 10 to 11, and we'll move on to the next topic.